Welcome to What's Your Story Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Story. On this pod, I sit down with people of color leaders to understand how they've been able to use their superpowers to make an impact on our world. And I do it one story at a time. Okay, my guest on the pod this week has a proven track record building brands that are culturally relevant. She's also currently the Chief Marketing Officer at Logitech for Creators, which I'm excited to learn more about. But with that as an intro, I'd like to welcome Erin Chin to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining. We're going to get into some exciting stuff that you're doing and learning more about your journey. But before we do that, I'd love if you could share a little bit about your background or maybe let us know what little Erin was like.
Cool. Well, I'd say that I've always been naturally curious and inquisitive for as long as I can remember to this day. I ask a ton of questions to better understand everything, because basically the way I see it, every question is an opportunity to be enlightened or even just to learn something new. So, you know, with that being said, while I'm sure many people perceived me to be a super nosy kid, I'd like to think that I was just foreshadowing my propensity to be a lifelong learner.
That's great. What do you have like a favorite question you would have asked or something that you caught people up when you were young that you wanted to know more about?
No, I mean, I'd say from a volume perspective, the most popular one was why and how, and just really trying to get into the details and the weeds and really truly understanding. I truly was curious and just wanted to understand how everything worked, and that's always been the case. And I think that's really been foundational for me as I've grown to be an adult and understand kind of that characteristic. I think it really helps me and has really contributed to my success.
That's great. So did you have an idea of what you wanted to be? Did you know you wanted to be a CMO, or what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
Well, you know, as a really young kid, I always remembered wanting to be a surgeon. I can't really think of any particular reason now beyond the fact that I wanted to help people and doctors were always just held in such high esteem. But I had a bit of a pivot because the summer before I started high school, that's when I got, like, I'll say the real inspiration for what I'd ultimately make my long-term career. So the movie Boomerang came out that summer. And not only did I love that movie, but I became enamored by the idea of working in marketing. So maybe it was the gravitas and the authority with which Jacqueline said, "I'm in charge of the marketing," to Marcus the elevator when she just met him. Yeah. Or maybe it's how, you know, that movie made marketing most times look like more fun than it did look like work. You know, just having the ability to constantly bring creative ideas to life while also solving business problems. But, you know, whatever it was, I was immediately hooked. And, you know, I knew that, like Jacqueline, I wanted to be in charge of the marketing one day.
Yeah, well, I love that reference point, because one of the things that's come up in all these conversations is this idea of seeing someone that you can relate to or that looks like you or has a similar experience, unlocking opportunities of what you could be. And so it's great to hear that there was also that moment in time of where art actually gave you and inspired you to pursue something that you would ultimately be great at. So it's awesome to hear that.
Totally. Thank you.
So let's go ahead and jump into your professional journey. I'd love to know, because you started out, if I have this right, in the banking world at Goldman Sachs, and you obviously navigated in a fast-paced world directly after school. How did you navigate that, and how did you kind of, you know, out of school go into such a competitive and interesting environment?
That's a really great question. Maybe I'll start out with how I ended up there. So I was a junior at Hampton University sitting in economics class when our professor mentioned that Goldman Sachs would be coming to campus to do a company presentation, and that, in his words, only the best of the best worked at Goldman Sachs. Mm. I had personally never heard of Goldman Sachs, but I figured that if what he was saying was true, not only should I know about it, but I also obviously needed to work there. So it became my personal mission to secure a job and, you know, really kind of make it happen. So, you know, after I did my research and found out more about the company, I actually had my set sight on the investment banking division, which was, you know, I'd say arguably their most prestigious division, but it's also one that they had never previously recruited students for from Hampton. So I was like, challenge accepted. And ultimately, I secured an internship for that summer in the investment banking group. So that was definitely helpful. And I got an offer to go back full time. And that, you know, that previous experience really did a lot to better help me prepare to navigate. I'd say, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was grueling. And the hours were really as bad as you've probably heard about. Actually, they were worse. But, you know, as an investment banking analyst, you're currency. The best currency that you have is your work product. So for me, making sure that my work was always tight was the best way to kind of build my reputation and help navigate. And also, I'd say establishing relationships with a lot of senior bankers who could ultimately become mentors or even sponsors to help me navigate was also pretty critical to my success, both within Goldman, but also, you know, I found it to be essential as I was looking for new opportunities after the conclusion of my two-year program, and also even when it came time to need business school recommendation letters. So, you know, I'd say that, you know, while the hours and the pace was brutal, it was a really practical business training that was pretty much unparalleled. I mean, I was sitting, 22 years old, sitting in a room with CEOs, like listening to their business challenges and our recommendations. And it was really, honestly, pretty epic.
Wow. It sounds like it required a lot of literal investment, but it also sounds like it really set that foundation for you to go on. And what I found fascinating about as I was going through your journey is there were a number of pivots. And so I want to talk about your next pivot when you went on to work at Viacom and you're working in international strategy and business development for MTV Networks, which to me sounds like a pretty dope job just to like be, you know, thinking about taking a property like that global and building out the business model. But I'm curious for you, like, well, is that when you saw the value of being culturally relevant, or how did you, you know, take away some additional experiences from that role?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'd say, you know, back in the early 2000s when I was at MTV, it was the quintessential cool brand. So working there definitely helped kind of solidify that as my kind of path and purpose. But I'd say the reality is that I've always been super interested in culture, especially music and beauty and fashion and style and those type of things. So, you know, it's really no surprise that I kind of naturally gravitated towards that space. Even, you know, when I got my role at Goldman, I was very vocal and intentional about wanting to be in the media and entertainment group because, to me, that was most aligned with the things that I was passionate about. And, you know, I thought it presented the best opportunity to work on things that were going to be interesting and fun to me. But, you know, like I said, I naturally gravitated towards that space. I was, you know, the girl always reading the Vibe magazine and the Source and Complex because I was always just interested in culture and passionate about it. And I always wanted to, like, surround myself and be steeped in it.
Gotcha. So you mentioned going to business school and getting those recommendations and whatnot. What led you to make that decision and then ultimately to pick the school you picked?
So that's another story. One of my colleagues that I worked with at Goldman Sachs in the investment banking analyst program was from Ghana. And she actually went to Harvard Business School after she finished the analyst program. Her husband also was from Ghana, and he also was a Harvard Business School alumni. And I had gone to their wedding in 2004 in Ghana, which was incredible. Wow. But I had met all of these HBS alum who had traveled all the way across the world to Ghana to be with them, you know, for their special day. And they just had so many fond memories and stories and talked about, you know, how special Harvard Business School was to them, both personally and professionally, and it really piqued my interest. So I came back from that trip totally enlightened and eager to look into applying to business school. And honestly, I had my sights set on Harvard. So at first, it was the only school that I was going to apply to, but I was like, my odds aren't amazing for getting in, so maybe I should have a backup plan. And so I did, I also applied to Columbia Business School. Fortunately, I got into both, and I you know, followed my dream, I'll say. It wasn't a long-term dream. It was more of a short-term dream. But once I had learned about it, I definitely became focused on getting the in and going to Harvard Business School.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of cool because you saw the value in what those relationships that were developed out of it and what it could open. But then I'm picking up a consistent theme where when someone tells you something is the best, you set your mind on it and you go get it, which I'm sure will probably rear its head as we continue through your journey.
Definitely a recurring theme in my life, Matt.
So after business school, you had a really impressive run across a number of spirits brands. So you worked at Diageo, you worked at Proximo Spirits. But what did you learn from that time doing marketing campaigns for these like recognized brands that all of us know and see and probably enjoy, like Crown Royal, Smirnoff, 1800, and such?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the things that I took away were a lot for my own kind of personal development. So first and foremost, I learned, you know, to really double down and be resolute in my desire to focus on what I wanted to focus on and where I wanted to build my career. And that was with lifestyle brands and doing work that's relevant in culture. You know, I realized even more the case that I don't need to, you know, make sacrifices and or settle to work with products or categories that don't really personally move me if I wanted to have a successful career in brand marketing. I also, you know, learned, that's maybe where I honed on the importance of being ruthlessly consumer-centric and putting consumers first to drive marketing decisions. I think that encompassed everything about, you know, like from how to gain and use consumer insights to being creative to delight the consumer with fresh and unique experiences. And most importantly, how that can both engender brand love and ultimately drive business growth. And, you know, I got the opportunity to really build and sharpen my skills as a lifestyle brand marketer during those years. And it was really a ton of fun. And also, those were fundamental years in shaping my own leadership and management style. I'd say during those times is when I had some really incredible and not so incredible managers to learn. And I, you know, did learn a lot from both. And I really started to analyze and practice what characteristics I wanted to model and avoid as a people leader. It's also when I started managing teams at scale. So I was getting the hands-on practice for building and leading high-performing teams, as well as navigating through challenges that also come along with that. And I'd say through that experience, I realized that leading and mentoring teams is something that really fulfills me. And it's an important discovery for me to help drive the decisions on the type of roles and opportunities that I'd pursue to make sure that that was a part of it.
Gotcha. So you know, I feel like I'm on the train and we have these stops along your journey. So on the next stop, you went on to lead the brand communications and consumer engagement for Mountain Dew, which for those of us that are in the marketing industry, there's a certain, I would say, prestige about those that have gone through the walls of Pepsi. And when you mentioned lifestyle marketing as something to really like build your career on, I feel like people from Pepsi tend to have that down and know how to do that very well. So I'm curious from your perspective, what do you think is it about going through those walls and sitting in those rooms and working on those brands that really helps people just understand how to tap into culture?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, my Pepsi experience was also really incredible. And to your point, you know, that company has such a focus for building and growing culturally relevant brands. And I was a lot of the talent there is homegrown. I haven't really ever worked at a place where like the average tenure was like 15 plus years. Like people really go there and they stay. But I was brought in from the outside at a senior level to really inject some fresh thinking on the Mountain Dew business because of the experience that I had all in spirits. And, you know, I'd say, you know, to answer your question, it was like I was living literally the brand marketer's dream. So, and I think that's an experience that you get at Pepsi, or you can get at Pepsi, but you know, I was essentially leading all of the sexy stuff, I like to call it, for a $5 billion, like, you know, well-regarded, highly recognized consumer brand. And I, you know, was able to do everything from revamping the brand positioning to campaign development, media, partnerships, experiential activation, and PR. And I think, you know, the thing about Pepsi and the like is there are just few marketing opportunities that exist that compare in scale and impact, you know, meaning big budgets and even bigger stages. And that really translated into, you know, my ability to do an incredible amount of work. So, you know, while I had done all of that stuff in spirits, you know, at Pepsi, I was literally doing 10x the amount of content and activation per year as I was at the previous companies. And, you know, so I got to do everything from two successful Super Bowl campaigns to NBA All-Star activations and really see and experience and lead, you know, a lot more initiatives because of the sheer volume of work that we would produce I got, you know, a lot more competent in content development and all of those things. And, you know, I think another interesting learning for me was that, you know, I thought that, oh, this is Mountain Dew and it's 80 years old and it's Pepsi, so everything would be figured out and done already. But I learned that, you know, even at a big company with an 80-year-old brand, there's still a lot of opportunities to make a huge and lasting impact, which was, for me, super rewarding. Like, for example, you know, I was able to lead securing the brand's first female athlete partnerships in, you know, core verticals of skateboarding and basketball for Mountain Dew, and also, you know, lead having the first female lead in a brand campaign for that brand. And so I think those were, you know, opportunities and experiences that I found really rewarding that were maybe a bit more unexpected.
Yeah, and again, I'm picking up this consistency of being at the cutting edge. Like, you're always on the kind of the forward most leading part of where the industry is going, which, you know, leads me to your current role. And, you know, being leading the marketing organization for Logitech for Creators, you know, I'm curious, one, what attracted you to this opportunity? Because it does feel, from an industry perspective, that's very different than where you were. So what led you to want to be interested in this?
Yeah, so maybe let me tell you just quickly what it is, just in case people don't know, and then I'll jump quickly into how I ended up here. But so Logitech for Creators is a brand extension of Logitech that we've developed really to provide tools for digital content creators. So we make microphones, cameras, lights, and software solutions to help creators to be able to share their passions. So our mantra is Together We Create, which is the, you know, the platform that my team and I developed. And it's our commitment really to put creators at the heart of everything we do by providing products and solutions that will help them create better, build a community that elevates creators of all types, whether they're first timers and experts, and really work together in partnership with the creator community to drive change for a more diverse and inclusive future. So that's a bit of background on, you know, Logitech for Creators. And I'd say, you know, what prompted me to join was really about expanding my horizons. I saw it as a great opportunity to broaden my scope. I mean, as you mentioned, I'd been working in beverages for over a decade, both, you know, mostly alcoholic, but non-alcoholic as well. And I was, you know, interested at the idea of exploring tech and really, you know, totally intrigued and excited about the rapid growth and potential that I saw in the creator economy. You know, the idea that content creation, what we're seeing is that it's been democratized from what used to be, you know, a small amount of studios that produced all the content that we all consume, to now millions and millions of individuals and, you know, their teams, of course, but making content that powers all of the many platforms that we all look to every day for entertainment. So I think, you know, it's incredibly amazing. And I was really excited about the idea to really contribute to that in a meaningful way.
Yeah. And you know, I as someone, I guess I can loosely label myself as a creator with the podcast.
Totally,
I think it's really interesting how you're going to the audience that's really creating that what's next and partner with them. And again, it's bringing some of that forward to your consumer centricity that you talked about earlier, bringing forward, being on that cutting edge. So what have been some of your initial priorities as you've gotten up to speed and tried to, you know, really make a difference and impact with this role and in the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, early priorities for sure were to come in and define what this brand extension is going to be and, you know, really shape and mold that. You know, defining what we stand for, what our brand purpose is, and quickly building an authentic connection with the creator community so that we could bring that to life. And then, you know, the idea that we also, you know, help drive these products to help them be able to share their passions with the world more simply. And, you know, do some of the other things that I was talking about. So that, like, when we built this brand extension, we built it on three pillars of creators, putting them at the center of everything we do. community, building that community of creators from, you know, first timers to pros, and partnering with creators to drive that change. So being able to partner with creators to do those things has really been the goals. I mean, our vision is to be the brand that creators aspire to be associated with. And, you know, our purpose as Logitech for Creators is to help all creators pursue their passions by unlocking their extraordinary potential and ability to shape culture, and doing it through those three pillars that I mentioned of creator, community, and change. So those were, I'd say, the initial priorities. And I'd say that we feel really good about where we've ended up and the journey that we're on.
That's great. So I imagine with having that community of such diverse and creative individuals, that it just allows you to think more broadly as the CMO of the things that you can tap into and the platforms you can build and the tactics you can use and channels you can be on. But what most excites you as a CMO about being a part of this community that you're building?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the most exciting thing for me is our creator centricity. I have an incredible, amazing team, and everyone on the team is super passionate about serving creators first and foremost. And I think being able to harness that passion into powerful programs that resonate with creators and help build our brand is really, really exciting. An example of that is something like the Songbreaker Awards, which we completely built and owned this platform to honor creators that were driving the popularity of music success based on viral dance challenges and memes that they created. And we were the only ones honoring creators in that way. And we even went on to partner with Billboard to create the first ever monthly Billboard chart that honors creators, you know, driving music, so we could continue to shine a light on them. And then earlier this year, we had our second annual Songbreaker Awards, where we brought that experience into Roblox. And we were the first music award shows to happen in the metaverse. We built this like really immersive branded world, and Lizzo performed along with Gayle, and you know, it was Lizzo's metaverse debut. And you know, of course, we awarded creators that continued to drive music culture forward, but we also had 6.6 million people come into Roblox and experience it with us as a real community moment. It was super impactful, and it drove tons of brand awareness with like more than 2 billion earned impressions. And I think one of the best feel-good moments from it all is we had a guy who reached out to us who was physically disabled, and he said that it was the first time that he's ever really been able to experience a concert in that way, because his physical disabilities didn't allow him to do, but he had this amazing immersive experience in Roblox with us, and that just literally melted my heart.
Wow. So there's so much in there that I love, because one, there's no shortage of marketers sitting in a room talking about the metaverse right now. Like, how do we get in and how do we do it? And it's like you and your team just went and made it happen in a big way. So it's like an inspiration to all those marketers out there that are kind of thinking versus the doing. And then the second part that is probably an unintended consequence, it sounds like, is how inclusive it was. And you were able to create an experience that could actually bring more people in and allow them to participate, which is, again, that's a journey that a lot of us are on, is how do we make these experiences and these branded moments more equitable, I would say, and inclusive of all the folks that we want to be a part of our community. So that is a great example of what we all should be striving to do.
Thank you.
So, you know, one last question, and then I'm gonna jump to some more of the personal brand side. I'm curious for you, as someone that is literally sitting next to creators and helping create that community, and someone that's had a great career that's been culturally relevant and touching in on some of those amazing, you know, cultural moments, what do you see that's happening next in culture? And like, what are you paying attention to right now?
So, you know, obviously the whole Web3 metaverse convo that we just talked about, and I gave you an example of kind of like how we participated in it in a way that was authentic to us. And I think that's the most important thing, is that you don't, you know, just jump in for the hype of it, but you really, you know, if it's the right thing to do, if you can authentically associate your brand and really contribute to the culture and not just jump on the bandwagon. I think also what I try to model and do, and what I maybe hope to see even more of is the work around driving culture by driving the change we all want to see in the world. And so I think, you know, it's a huge component to what I feel is my duty as a marketing leader of a culturally relevant brand, and something that we built into our core pillar, as I mentioned, with change being one of our three kind of brand pillars. And, you know, we've done a good amount of work here as well. Just, you know, our hallmark kind of change initiative is our Creators for BIPOC initiative, which we're in our third year now. The month of July, actually, each year is the one we dedicate to highlighting BIPOC creators. So for anyone who doesn't know what BIPOC means, it means Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. And really working and with the creator community to collectively address the barriers that BIPOC creators disproportionately face. It was an initiative that was started back in July of 2020 after everything that was going on at that time by a part of our Logitech for Creators portfolio, Streamlabs, our streaming software. And it was launched as a minimum of $1 million donation over 10 years to support BIPOC charities. And we really built upon it last year. We dedicated July, as I mentioned, as Creators for BIPOC Month, and really encouraged the community to work collectively to address the BIPOC creators, the issues that BIPOC creators face. Really, you know, through an approach of recognition, representation, and resources. We, on the resources front, we raised more than $300,000 for charities that support BIPOC causes through a combination of ourselves donating $250,000 and also through our Streamlabs charity platform, helping creators raise over $57,000 for those charities directly. And then also, you know, as an additional kind of component to what we did last year, we partnered with an award-winning choreographer and really a visionary named Jaquel Knight to help kind of 10 BIPOC creators secure copyrights for their choreography. So, you know, I'm sure you've heard about all of the issues with creators, especially BIPOC creators, not getting their credit mm-hmm. where it's due. And we really wanted to make sure that we helped these creators set themselves up for success to own their work and be able to monetize their work and not have it be ripped off and show up in movie merch and things like that for all of their efforts. So that was a big piece of what we did last year. And it continues this year. We created a change council comprised of 5 different creators across that represent a wide range of identities to really help inform and spearhead our future DEI initiatives. As you can tell, it's something that I'm super passionate about, my team is super passionate about, and it's something that we really, you know, make it a point to do. I'm seeing more of it, but I wish I was seeing even more.
Yeah. Well, one, kudos to you and your teams for making change a core pillar versus it being something that sits in, like, you know, ESG land, or it's only, you know, this group over here does that work and we do the marketing. Because I think that anyone that has a brand should be doing what you're doing and thinking about how do I use that brand for change that we all want to see and we all benefit from. So I just want to recognize how making that strategic choice is very important. And I hope many others follow your lead on that.
Thank you, Matt.
But speaking of brands, I want to talk about your personal brand, the brand of Aaron. What would you say is your superpower?
My superpower, I would say that it is probably my optimism. I think I have this really uncanny ability to see, or at least really, really try hard to find positivity in any situation. I think personally, by having a positive attitude, you manifest positivity in your life. And I'm a big believer that has really laid the foundation for me and primed me to receive the incredible opportunities and blessings that I've enjoyed thus far in my life.
That's great. How would you say your community or your family has contributed to making you uniquely who you
are? Tons, I would say. So, I mean, I'll start really with my family. And, you know, my family has been an incredible source of inspiration. You know, I was raised with a really solid foundation and a really strong support system. So, you know, just as an example, huge inspiration. My mom, she went back to school to get her master's degree in her 30s after being a stay-at-home mom to 4 kids for 8 years. And she went on to have a successful career as a social worker in the Minneapolis Public Schools. my dad, you know, really sadly had to drop out of school in sixth grade to care for his younger siblings when his parents were tragically murdered in a racial hate crime in Jim Crow era Mississippi. And so, you know, like, you know, he later, you know, went on to get his GED, and he went on to become a very successful business owner and hairstylist with some notable celebrity clients. But I mean, I think that the theme there is my parents set an incredible example for me that really anything's possible if I, you know, set my mind to it and I work really hard to achieve it. And it's not to say that, you know, there wouldn't be and there hasn't been challenges and setbacks, but from a really, really young age, I saw them overcome like pretty huge odds and be successful. And so, you know, that has been, you know, monumental in my life. And I'd say, you know, even beyond my direct family, you know, especially like as I was approaching college, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to earn scholarships from community organizations like, you know, the local Minneapolis chapters of the National Urban League and the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated and other organizations. So, you know, I did growing up feel like I had the backing and support from my community and that they were, you know, invested in my development and ultimately my success.
That's all. I mean, thank you for sharing those stories on your parents, because I feel like that tied the knot for me on seeing where a lot of that determination, that drive, that stick-to-itiveness that you've referenced throughout really, really came from. But I'm curious for you, what role has what I like to refer to as wifehood and motherhood played in your journey?
Huge, as you can imagine from, you know, what I mentioned about my family growing up. Family is, you know, the ultimate in importance, and, you know, continues to be my biggest source of inspiration. Everything I do, I'd say, you know, is to really help create the best life that I possibly can for my family, you know, together with my husband. And, you know, my husband is a successful executive. He's the head of investor relations at Warner Music. And he not only inspires me with how he's built his own career and honestly helped mentor me along the way. I mean, he was reviewing my business school applications when I was applying because he had gone to Columbia Business School and had gone through the process already. And, you know, he's my ultimate sounding board and guidance counselor for anything I need wisdom on, whether it be personal or professional. But he's also a really incredible partner. And I think, you know, we model gender equity in our family as we both work full-time jobs, beyond full-time jobs, and we share family and household responsibilities. And I think, you know, having a true partnership like that is the only way we've been able to make it work. You know, we also, of course, rely on help from family and nannies or au pairs. But I think the idea that we're modeling that for our sons who are, you know, 10 and 9-year-old boys, I think is really important for both of us so that they can see what that, you know, gender equity looks like in a relationship. And I'd say, you know, being a mom has impacted my life in every imaginable way, in every way imaginable. It's, you know, to me, the most awesome and amazing gift. And, you know, my kids are a tremendous source of joy, even when they drive me crazy, but they also come with a huge responsibility to not only take care of them, but to be a role model for them in the same way that my parents were for me. And I think, you know, also, becoming a mother made me immediately realize that prioritizing and being there for my family would always be the number one choice that I'd make in all situations, and I would never feel guilty about that. You know, coming to that realization was made easy for me to make quote unquote tough decisions because I know what's most important to me. So, I mean, in my personal situation, both of my boys were born very premature, and my second one really almost scarily premature. He was almost 3 months early. And, you know, it was an incredibly stressful time because, of course, first and foremost, we were concerned about his health and his development. But I also decided at that time that I needed to be in the hospital with my baby, and I didn't want to take my short maternity leave until I could actually be home to truly bond with him. So I asked my manager if I could continue to work while he was in the hospital in the NICU for those 3 months, but if I could work fully remote from the hospital every single day for those 3 months. And that was before working remote was a thing, because I wanted to be there so I could feed him and so I could take care of him and be there and, you know, be in his presence and watch his growth and development until he was released from the NICU. So I did that, and I started, they said yes, and I was able to start my maternity leave when he was able to come home. I mean, if you fast forward 9 years, both of my boys are healthy and wonderful, and I would never regret doing anything and everything in my power just to ensure their health and wellness was taken care of as my first priority.
Yeah, well, that's phenomenal, because I think for you to look back and say, I made this choice because that was number one priority, you remember why that was number one priority. You probably don't remember what the projects were. You probably don't remember what the campaigns you were working on were, but you remember what those moments and times were where you were able to be with your son. And I think that's the perspective, especially those of us that are fortunate to be parents, have to have, is what are those important moments where we should show up and look at it through the lens of what matters, versus we feel like we're pulled in all these directions and you have to show the FaceTime here. You have to, be in the room for this. And it's like you creatively saw for it before we had this idea of work from home or this work remotely as an option. So that's, again, credit to you for that.
Thank you.
So I'm curious, have you had, and if you have, what was your mama, we made it moment?
Well, I'd say the answer to that is yes and no. I mean, okay. I've worked super hard at everything I've done for my entire life. And I've been very, very fortunate to be able to create a wonderful life and career for myself. And, although I've always been super ambitious, I often do pinch myself in disbelief that I'm, living this life, which, by the way, is no means perfect, but is, it's really exceeded my dreams. But because I'm ambitious, my natural inclination is to want to keep climbing. So I know that I haven't fully made it or risen, to the peak of my potential just yet.
Yeah, you're another one of those overachievers that goes from mountain to mountain and looks for the next tallest mountain. Now, I think it's awesome to have that perspective of there's still more to be done and there's still more impact to be had. So, and I'm sure, when I have you back on, you'll be able to talk about all the additional great things you've done. So we're going to close out and hopefully have a little bit of fun. When they turn your life story into a movie, who would you want to play you on the big screen?
That is an easy one.
Oh.
Because it would undoubtedly be Yara Shahidi. And I'll tell you why. Her talent to me is absolutely boundless. Not only is she a great actor, but she's also brilliant. She's passionate. She's driven. I mean, I actually truly find her to be an inspiration. And to me, she's the epitome of Black girl magic. I actually often joke and say that she's who I want to be when I saw her speak on a panel. I mean, I follow her on social. I follow her, so I know a lot about what she does and who she is at this point, at least what she, puts out there for the world to see. But I also saw her speak on a panel once at ComplexCon, and I was honestly just blown away by her wisdom and her insight, especially at such a young age. So, I'm not sure if she would agree to play a young Erin Quinn, but she would definitely be my first call.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what would be the song that plays in your trailer?
Definitely Beyonce, of course.
Okay.
And I would say it would either be My Power or Run the World, Girls. Hmm.
Okay. Surprisingly, I haven't gotten a lot of Beyonce to that question. Yeah, that is, when you said Beyonce, obviously, I had to think back. I don't know. I may have had one or two folks that actually went with her.
What do most people say out of curiosity, Matt?
Probably the most popular is Started from the Bottom, because I think it just literally comes to mind for everyone. But I've had all different types of songs I know and songs I don't know that I had to go listen to and find after. So that one is probably the most wide-ranging question of the answers I get back. So obviously I'm a huge fan of stories. Not only is it my last name, but I just like hearing people's stories. And I feel like there's so much we can learn from their personal experiences that we maybe haven't gone through. But for you, if you could sit with three people, they could be with us, they could have passed, and hear their story firsthand, who would be your three?
Yeah, so I'd say my first one's a twofer, so you know, hopefully that is acceptable, but Barack and Michelle Obama, of course. Okay. I've read their books, but there would be nothing like the opportunity to sit with them, ideally over a fabulous meal and cocktails, mm-hmm. and just chop it up in person about what their amazing lives and experiences have been like. You know, also have then shed some wisdom on their beautiful relationship, their approach to parenting. Actually, I want all the wisdom from them. I think that would be pretty dope.
Definitely, definitely.
That's my first. My second would be Dr. Mae Jemison. I think it would really be incredible just to hear about her experience trailblazing, being the first woman of color to go to space, and just hear about what obviously the space experience was like, but afterwards. And I'd love to just understand kind of what motivated her and what she learned from that experience. And then the last one, I'd be really intrigued to be able to sit down with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. now and hear his perspective on kind of where his assessment of where we are in our racial equity journey, and more generally kind of where we are as a country 54 years after he kind of tragically, you know, was taken from us, and any thoughts and advice he'd have about what we can do to improve our situation going forward.
Yeah, that would be a really fascinating one, because I think a lot of times we take the words out of context from what he truly was telling us, and he can be used as a tool sometimes to not actually stand for the things he stood for. So I'd be really fascinated to hear how he thinks we're doing and what we should be focused on in this day and age.
Definitely.
So is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share, or anything you want to ask me?
You know, I talked about how many questions I like to ask, so I feel like I have to at least ask you one, Matt. You know, I'm just curious. I love what you're doing here, and, you know, serendipitous that your last name is Story and you love to tell people stories. But I guess beyond that, like, what really inspired you to do this podcast and really kind of, you know, meet with people and learn about their stories and kind of help, you know, bring them to the world?
Well, first and foremost, it's selfish, because I get to learn from all these amazing people. You know, the first season, it was a bunch of my friends. Second season, it was a mix. Now I'm meeting my friends' friends and just being able to take away gems, take away insight, which I, you know, it makes me better. It makes me more well-rounded. And you know, even if no one listens, I get that out of it. The larger opportunity, I think, though, is I truly believe that empathy is created by proximity. And hopefully through the podcast and sharing people's stories, I'm bringing people closer together and helping people understand how someone, like even in the stories you shared about your own experience and your own journey and your parents' journey, hopefully that brings someone closer to, like, there's so many layers to us as people. And we sometimes don't think about that. And we don't think about the things we have in common or the things that we have shared in terms of our outlook. And, you know, kind of you mentioned being an optimist and seeing this better future. And so that is my hope, that we can get a little bit closer through the art of storytelling.
Awesome. Well, kudos to you for doing it. And yeah, no, it's pretty incredible. And thank you for having me.
Well, no, thank you for agreeing to do it. But before I let you go, if anybody wants to learn more about your story, they want to connect with some of the things you're doing, where should I send them?
Sure. Well, I can be found on LinkedIn, of course, Erin Chin. I think it's linkedin.com/Erin-Chin. And if you're really interested in seeing my infrequent posts that are primarily of my kids and like one post per vacation, you can check me out on Instagram at Hot Mama Chin, HOTMAMACHIN.
Awesome. I'll include those links. Appreciate you taking the time to share with us and give your tidbits and wisdom for us to learn from.
Of course, it was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much, Matt.
That was a dope conversation with Erin, and really appreciate her sharing her story and her journey and how she's really set out challenges and not only accepted them, but also achieved and accomplished so much across her story. The three things that I took away is first and foremost how curiosity has really been a differentiator for her. And you know, she started out by talking about the questions that she would ask as a kid and being known for asking questions. And I think you could even hear across her journey how asking the right question really became an unlock for her. And I think about the example she gave of asking if she could work remotely when her son was in the hospital, and also asking questions at the right time about the consumers and the programs and whatnot that she was establishing. I think it was a consistency across the board that we sometimes don't think about curiosity as that differentiator, but it definitely is something that stood out to me. The second thing is, and she talked about this in what the work she's doing with Logitech for Creators, but really one of the pillars was being able to drive the change that we want to see. And I think that is an inspiration to all of us, whether you're a marketer that's leading a global brand or you think about your own personal brand. How can you use it to be the change that you ultimately want to see in the world? It's just a rallying cry for, I think, all of us. And then lastly, it was something she shared toward the end, but just her perspective and knowing that while life may not be perfect, she's far exceeded the dreams that she would have had many, you know, years ago or starting out. And I think a lot of times we can sometimes get caught up in the here and now of potentially, you know, what are the obstacles we're facing or what potentially we may not have, as opposed to really thinking about how far we've been able to come and what we've been able to achieve and seeing that that is just part of the story of where we are today. And there's obviously more to come, but also thinking about how we can celebrate a lot of those achievements. And so I think it was just a good reminder to have that perspective so that as you're looking forward, you don't forget about what potentially has happened to allow you to be where you are today. Until next time, I encourage you, as always, to continue to share your story. It's so important, not only for you, but for others to hear your story. And if you have any feedback or any comments about any of the podcasts, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at all of the social channels at Matt E. Story, or you can go to my website, www.mattestory.com.